Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
My name is Dave Hanratty, and there will be no encore, a remixed edition of the intro this week, as done masterfully by Sonic Architect Adam.
It was my pleasure. That was a lot of fun, and you would be so surprised at how side-by-side Bantam's Move and
M83's Midnight City sync up. It had that thing, though, for a second where it's like, I remember listening to a song by The Horrors, Sea Within a Sea, and there's like this massive arpeggiated breakdown middle eighth that goes on for quite some time, and it's like, like whatever, and like I remember like being on a bus once, and then like my left ear and my right ear started hearing them at different tempos, and which really freaked me out. That is an M83 special, because we're going to be talking a lot about M83, the French electronica outfit, later in the show, because we're doing top five M83 tracks. If you're familiar with the show, of course, you'll know that I'm obsessed with M83, but I've brought along maybe a bigger obsessive, I don't know.
We've found common ground here.
We've found lots of common ground.
Yeah, as in, and we're still sending, we still very often send each other, you know, Spotify links to songs that we both know, but you want to hear this again right now, don't you?
Oh yeah, 100%.
You did yesterday, I believe.
I sent you the M83 track yesterday with just a crying emoji next to it.
And
you
went, response was,
I know. Yeah. This is Michael Pope, everybody. Of course, frontman of the sadly, you know, may they rest, Le Galaxy.
Retired.
In many ways, Ireland's answer to M83.
Oh, easy. Yeah.
Well,
we were never booked to play in the Red Cow Inn.
That's true.
M83 were.
That's true. Or to support Kings Leon in the Three Arena, inexplicably, which did.
Sorry, what?
Kings Leon played Three Arena like three nights back in, I want to say, it was Defiant Post Midnight City.
It was Midnight City Flush for sure, yeah.
Like, in fairness, good taste in that band.
Fantastic.
And I can only imagine that the audience were very confused.
Yeah, because it's a jarring experience.
Because you, like me, we were both at every gig they've played here apart from that one.
I was at the Andrews Lane Theatre in 2008.
Oh, wow.
And of course, you were there and I was there and we didn't know each other at that point.
At Vicar Street, I would assume.
I was at Vicar Street, which was great. And I haven't seen them since.
But I should, what I alluded to there was when they were booked for a kind of a small, it was kind of a city festival, you know, the kind of an urban festival called Bud Rising. You know, the streets will never forget. You might remember, you know.
Oh my God, I remember that.
It was kind of an MCD thing. And M83 were booked for the Red Cow Inn and they just didn't show up.
They got smartened up.
Yeah.
That's fucking incredible. I do remember I interviewed Dan Bochner of Wolf Parade and Handsome Furs fame when I was in college, and I was relaying a story that a friend of mine had told me about seeing M83 play in Stockholm because he was going out with a Swedish girl at the time. And he said that after the first track, my friend Adam, shout out to my buddy Adam, who's been a huge influence on my musical life. Apparently after the first track, Adam just like, you know, was like, woo! And like, you know, like chanting along, and his girlfriend was like, no, Adam, no, we don't do that here. Right. And it's like a weird cultural thing. So
they just stand and stare, don't they? That's right.
Yeah. And I was telling this to the guy on the phone, but of course I did that weird thing where like, and I panicked, and like, you know, I was still getting new in terms of interviewing people, et cetera. And you know, I'm talking on the phone to a guy whose band I absolutely love, Wolf Parade. And I'm saying to him, like, instead of me saying, my friend had this happen to him, my brain went, when I saw M83, and I lied. And he's like, where did you see them? And I went, and I was like, you know, Sweden. And then he was like, whereabouts? And I went, oh, just like, and I said, and I'll never forget this, I went, oh, just some little village. And he went, a village? And I was like, next question.
Let's see how deep the rabbit hole goes.
He knew I was lying.
There was another one.
I knew that he knew I was lying.
Neither of you actually admitted to it in the end?
No, we just kind of moved on with the conversation. But
Body and Soul, I think it was 2013.
Yeah, I didn't go.
That is the one I have up on you. Yeah, I think we're 4-3.
Okay.
3-2.
3-2. Yeah. Real quick, La Galaxy, again, retired, may they rest. Well, if La Galaxy weren't Ireland's answer to M83,
which they were, everyone.
Who were they Ireland's answer to, would you say?
Oh, no, they'd be without compare on this island anyway. Okay. Or he would be without compare. No,
but like Galaxy, I mean, like, who inspired you to form that wonderful outfit back
then? Well, for me, when we came to playing live dance music and live electronic music, it was Dead Cities,
Red Seas and Lost Ghosts by M83.
It genuinely was that, because at the time I was big into my post-rock. I was big into Godspeed to Black Emperor, Mogwai, and all the Constellation stuff from Canada. And I hadn't really heard that kind of, you know, the wall of sound, kind of distorted noise, fuzz thing coming with electronic music. And I literally remember hearing Run Into Flowers on MTV. You know, remember the glory of
MTV2.
Half two at night, MTV, yeah. Just played video after video after video. And that was across the Rubicon there. That was what I wanted to make, that kind of music. Powerful, emotional synth music. You
okay.
know?
Well, we're going to hear more about that later on in our top five, your top five MTV3 songs. I went to the motion pictures at the weekend and I saw a really, really great new film, a Japanese film called Monster. And it's absolutely gorgeous. Like, the less you know about it, the better. Just go see it. Take my word for it. But the score, which was really, really good, was one of the last scores created by the late, great Ryuichi Sakamoto.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, wow, yeah.
So highly recommended if anybody wants to go and check that out.
What genre are we talking here?
Drama. Okay. Like kind of a multi-perspective drama. Okay. It's here's the thing that happens. It's about a kid in a school. You know, here's the thing that happens. And here's the teacher's perspective. And here's the kid's
Rashomon.
Perspective. Yeah, kind of the Rashomon thing. I really, really loved it. It was a real kind of pick-me-up. So I'd highly recommend going to see it. But before we move off the news section, of course, it is patreon.com/noencore. Everyone helps support the show. And thanks to everyone that does. And on that note.
And speaking of that, a patron has got in touch. And a patron Jay Wilson has given us a pronunciation answer on how to pronounce the Wanna Dies. It's the Wanna Dies.
Is it?
He has said, just about to pull the Patreon post up here now.
Last week's show, we had
Wannadies?
A top five by...
Did you think Wannadies?
I thought it was the Wannadies, yeah.
Oh.
You know, the You and Me song.
Yeah.
That was number one last week.
They also have a great song called Hit. You know the song?
No.
Yeah, great.
So Jay Wilson has said, love the episode. Pronunciation of the Wannadies is Dies, D-Y-E-S, not D's as in D-E-E-S. According to this interview announcer, and he's linked a YouTube link. And At the Indie Disco by The Divine Comedy.
I don't know. I think I prefer my way of saying it. And thus...
I like the ambiguity around
this is biopic and biopic all over again. I've got
Legal Axi was my band. We got called that for a
Legal Axi.
Legal Axi. Someone, there was a stray, you know, space bar missing or whatever. Legal Axi. I was like, okay, it's fine.
Real quick before we get going. You DJ... You know,
I do.
You've often had people come up and,
on the ones and twos, the wheels of steel.
Yeah, you've often had people kind of come up and you know, pester you for things.
They can try, but they, you know, I'm a nasty piece of work.
Can they get past the wall of sound that is you? We'll pick that up after the news section, and you know, it's time to say goodbye to Frank Sinatra. We have a new news sting.
We sure do.
Check it out, everybody.
You're a fucking newsman, Don. I ever tell you otherwise, you. punch me in the face.
You know, it's appropriate actually that we choose Jeff Daniels from the newsroom for our new news sting, because on this day I was in a very busy newsroom as the news filtered through that there was going to be a political earthquake, and sure enough, a couple of hours later, Leo Varadkar has announced that he's stepping down as our great leader. You know, it's all over. Sad news, of course, not really. But the reason I mention this, there is a musical tie-in, because people were, of course, sharing the wonderful tweet.
Oh, the best tweet. It's one of the best ones. So, it's so good.
The Avicii one, is it?
Yeah. On the 20th of April, 2018, Leo Varadkar said, and I quote on Twitter, he said, "So sorry to hear of the untimely passing of Avicii. Wake Me Up was the song of the summer of 2013 and my song of the Camino." So we'll always have that, if nothing else.
It's just fantastic.
It's great. Like,
that's just a great tweet.
It's a great tweet.
No notes, 10 out of 10.
No notes at all. But I mean,
I kind of wanted to now know what the top, like, was that, that wasn't the year of Get Lucky, was it?
2013, yeah, it was.
Okay, so that was his song of the summer.
Yeah.
I know. I wonder what else was it. Come on, you have that memory. Anything else?
I can't recall. No, I can't recall.
Shall I bring up the charts?
I was still working in Hot Press at the time. I'm sure there was lots of great stuff going on.
Yeah, we didn't know each other, really, did we?
Did we know each other, though?
Maybe when we went across today in the Hot Press tent.
I interviewed Michael many times, and I thought that you didn't like me for a long time.
A lot of people think that about me.
Because there was, you know.
Usually because I don't like them. But not with you, David.
Eventually. I think
we had common ground.
It was our common ground. We eventually, like, it was our love for the television show Hannibal that finally kind
of it was.
Brought us together, I think.
Yeah.
And ever since, we've been best boys
best
together.
Best boys.
What I wanted to ask was, when you're DJing, does anybody ever come up and say, you know, play Avicii? Does that happen to you?
No, Bad Bunny. We discussed this.
You do get Bad Bunny.
I don't know
Bunny.
Who that is. You know what? Now I do, because he was on the Oscars.
He was, yeah.
He did pronounce, him and The Rock came out, am I wrong?
Yeah, and do you know what they gave the award to? Jonathan Glazer. Which,
that's
of course,
why I'm,
has led to
and,
all that.
So that's the infamous Bad Bunny, the guy that...
this is a pro-Jonathan Glazer podcast, by the way, just
in
case any confusion there.
But yeah, so they asked for Bad Bunny. They never asked for Avicii, no.
He's one of the biggest recording artists in the entire world. And you're like...
But like, that's the thing. Like, this thing moves so fast. You know, the Barn trance dance thing he had well back is gone now. It's out of favor. So that's the end of it.
Okay.
You know?
Would we like to know more about who was in the Billboard Hot 100?
I do want to know the competition that Leo faced for his...
For
the Camino
he
banger
did
that
pick
year.
The alternative by not going with Get Lucky. So there you go.
I should say Get Lucky only came in at number 14, which is bananas.
This is the Billboard...
Billboard Hot 100 from 2013 year-end singles.
Don't
chart.
Say it, Dave. Don't say it.
What?
So
don't talk about Daft Punk. Don't talk about Random Access Memories. I beg you.
I did last week, kind of, in a roundabout way. I'll let it go.
Perfect. If you want to know, listen back to last week's news session. So number one, Thrift Shop, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, let's be honest, you know.
Okay,
I can't hate on Macklemore, of course, as first of all, pro Palestine, outspoken.
Yes.
Best surprise of the year.
Best
award?
Surprise of last year by being so outspoken. Saw him live, infamously, of course, and it was one of the greatest nights of my entire life. I tweeted about it.
We haven't talked about this.
We have talked about this. Yeah, I live tweeted it. Yeah.
Point.
I got trashed and I live tweeted it. Those tweets are all gone now because I deleted my old tweets. But I mean, like, Other Side is a song by him. It's actually very affecting.
Okay.
I can't hate that guy.
Number two in the list, we're going to skim over very quickly.
Oh, so sorry. We had St. Patrick's Day and he is responsible for the song Irish Celebration.
Irish Celebration, which we have heard on this podcast once and will never again.
Unbelievable.
Again, skimming over this, number two, Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke. Radioactive by Imagine Dragons next. Harlem Shake by Bauer.
Ooh, yeah,
it was the year of the Harlem Shake.
Summer of Harlem Shake.
Had us in a vice grip. Can't Hold Us by Macklemore and Ryan Lewis.
Banger. Sorry. When they played that at the Three Arena gig and everyone, like, I was, you know, in the seats, of course. Everyone in the upper tiers were like stamping their feet, and I was like,
with the piano,
and I was this is the end. I was like, we're going to die, and somehow didn't.
Next was Mirrors by Justin Timberlake.
Banger. Maybe his last good song.
The last good song for sure. Just Give Me a Reason by Pink. When I Was Your Man by Bruno Mars. Cruise by Florida Georgia Line featuring Nelly.
I'm starting to think that Avicii wasn't out this year, probably the year before, and he just remembers it from...
He was there.
Okay.
What number do we think he was on?
In the Billboard Hot 100 in 2013.
The year-end singles, 2013.
37.
Nope.
I don't know.
Any idea? Any guess?
14.
Closer, it was 19.
Okay.
So only slightly below.
Didn't get that Varadkar bump in the States. Famed Varadkar bump.
We had Royals by Lord, I Knew You Were Trouble by Taylor Swift, We Can't Stop on a Wrecking Ball by Miley Cyrus.
Wow.
And Suit and Tie by Justin Timberlake. Bad song. Jay-Z. Terrible.
Bad song. Okay, that's enough.
Yeah, there's, the rest of them are not great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Leo, I guess, you know, he picked one from the top 20, you know, as a soundtrack for that whole fucking walk.
Finger on the pulse.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't look to Varadkar for good music taste or morals. But I would look to Shigeichi Nagishi to be the inventor of karaoke. He passed away. He invented the first karaoke machine. He died a week ago at the age of 100.
Good innings.
Great innings.
Yeah.
So there you go. Karaoke. Do we all love it?
Absolutely.
What's your go-to, Mick?
I'm very scared of it. Weirdly, even when I was in the Galaxy, I couldn't step up.
Really?
Don't know why. Never got to the bottom of it, really. I'd be happy enough. It's like when I go to a fun park, like, or when I watch people eat spicy food. I don't, if they're having a great time, I'm so happy they're having a great time. I love to watch people on roller coasters. I'll never go on one. I love to watch people eat spicy food. I'll never eat it. And I'd like to watch people doing karaoke, but I don't like it.
I think, did we do it once or we were going to?
No, oh, we did. No, we did. We did.
Workman's karaoke.
Okay, Sunday night. That's different.
Yeah.
Well, we've been out. I know where we were. Yeah, we've been out. It was just after EP.
Right.
In 2016.
Gonna have to remind me.
I think we did A Little Respect, maybe.
Sounds like something we would do. Yeah.
That genuinely is the only time I've done karaoke, I'd say, in my adult life.
Barely remember it. I did it before, yeah, in like...
That doesn't count, though. That's like in front of a crowd. Like, that's not like you and your mates. It's in front of a crowd. And it is like...
People are kind of singing with you.
It's like 2:30 on a Sunday night and, you know...
I tried to do Live and La Vida Loco before. And
fantastic.
It's too hard to do. Like that man, that man is fit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. A lot of words in a short amount of time. A
lot going on. Yeah, it made me have a new appreciation for Ricky Martin.
What is your go-to, though?
I don't have one, because I don't, like, I'm similar. Like, I'm not a singer, you know?
But. If I was to do it, and it's got the least amount of notes to cover, probably Mr. Brightside, because it's very like, you don't really have to go anywhere. You just stay up there for most of it.
Yeah.
And then everyone else will start screaming along, and you're pretty much covered for the whole song.
That's fair, yeah.
Yeah, I guess Mr. Brightside would be mine.
My go-to is Naive by the Kooks, and I act out every second of that music video.
That's so crazy.
I swear to God, and there's something takes over. It has gone down so well on every instance I've done it. Every single time.
How many instances?
Three. Like three times. Different crowds.
If I was ever to do it, I'd like to do something absolutely ridiculous, like a fucking Anastasia song or something.
I'm out of love.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'll figure
Shows
it out.
Shows your hubris that you think you could ever match Anastasia, the pair of you.
We've occasionally broken out into song on this very show.
And we'll continue to.
It does happen. But yeah, in the future we shall see. Karaoke is a bit scary.
I mean, there is a culture of, you know, if you're on your in Japan and if, you know, you're on your lunch break, you go out for 45 minutes, you go to karaoke and just sing it, you know, find yourself a boot and just go there and sing. That'd be the kind of thing I'd get behind, where you can, it's actually something you can enjoy by yourself, practice, get better, you know, just enjoy the feeling of it. But it's always very performative and it makes me nervous.
Yeah, absolutely. What makes me nervous, though, is the upcoming reboot of the motion picture The Crow, which stars...
You're not happy? Alex Proyas is not happy.
Alex Proyas loyal. We're going to take a listen to some of the trailer now for this upcoming film, because it stars Bill Skarsgård as The Crow.
Mm.
And there's a music tie in here. FKA Twigs plays his beloved... it doesn't go very well for them, but
spoilers,
yeah, for a remake of a film from 1994, I want to say, which I rewatched recently. But yeah, so we're getting this new Crow film. It's been in development hell for a very long time. But let's take a listen to the trailer and hear what it sounds like, shall we?
What's the first thing you liked about me?
I thought that you were quite brilliantly broken.
You feel like my person.
You feel like my person.
What's the worst thing you've ever done?
I saw things. I shouldn't have seen any of it.
So yeah, The Crow, the reboot. Bill Skarsgård is in this movie. FKA Twigs is in this movie. They play, you know, kind of alt people, tattooed up people. He looks like fucking Lil Peep in this version of The Crow.
NCAD graduates is what I said.
if there's people around now, like, you know, when you saw the 1994 version, you're like, yeah, I know that. I know that guy. You know, he thinks he's rad. He's got, but are these people like that around now?
Well, like face tattoos and pink hair. Yeah, of course.
Even in the way they appear in the trailer and stuff, like,
the trailer's a bit weird. It looks bad. It looks like Suicide Squad or something. It's directed by Rupert Sanders. Can you name anything he's done?
I think he did Snow White and the Huntsman,
and he did the Ghost in the Shell remake. And he also had an affair with Kristen Stewart.
The first Planet of the Apes movie. Am I wrong there?
No, that's Rupert Wyatt. Rupert Wyatt, I think. Okay, yeah. So this guy, he had an affair with Kristen Stewart, which ended the Kristen Stewart case. Do
best thing to happen to both of them, if you ask me.
He also lost his wife as a result of that, and the reason I mention that is because her name is Liberty Ross, sister of Atticus Ross. So there you go.
It's all, everything is tied
back.
Got
married. Her web connects them all. Yeah.
She's since got married to Jimmy Iovine, so it's all connected, yeah. This film, right, The Crow, I mean, if you've never seen The Crow, anybody, it's based on a graphic novel. Brandon Lee, son of Bruce Lee, of course, was in The Crow and tragically died during the making of it. He was shot. It was an accident, obviously, and, you know, it's known for that reason, but it's, you know, it's a cult classic.
Was it a situation that was like Alec Baldwin kind of thing, where there was
kind
like
of, they sent their
bullet
fucking,
was left in the gun by mistake?
Yes, they sent their gun, their prop master home for the day, which was a bad idea. And an actor shot him during a scene where he was supposed to, but there was like a kind of a shrapnel in the gun. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't the bullet, it was a small piece of metal that went into his abdomen and he bled out.
Shot him, they thought he was acting, of course he wasn't. The actor who shot him was Michael Massey, who's since passed away. You might remember him from Seven, in which he plays the
proprietor of the what would you call it? A knocking shop? Sorry, yeah. I don't know what
you say. Knocking shop?
The sex
club. I don't know why I'm using 1920s lingo.
The sex club brothel owner who like has that scene where Brad Pitt's
like,
what
you do for a living?
And he's like, no, I don't. He was a good actor, unfortunately. But he did say, like, you know, he was on record as being like, this basically ruined my life. As you imagine it would do. Horrible accident. Yeah. But The Crow, you know, like, I rewatched it recently. It's, you know, it's held together by Sellotape, but I really do quite like it. It's got a good soundtrack. You know, you got The Cure on there, Nine Inch Nails, etc. Spawned a whole bunch of terrible sequels, which I'm currently working my way through.
City of Angels.
Which I watched the other night. It's really, really bad. It's only going to get worse.
How many are we talking? I don't know.
There's four films,
okay,
right?
And then what?
Like, can you give me? And then there's a TV show. Oh, can you give me any?
I didn't know Tara Reid's in one of them.
I
tapped out of City of Angels.
They got The Crow. They got The Crow, City of Angels. Yeah. They got The Crow, Salvation.
Okay.
And then The Crow.
Terminator.
It actually predates it. And then you got The Crow, Wicked Prayer, which stars Edward Furlong as The Crow. David Boreanaz, TV's Angels, in it as well. And there was a TV show called The Crow, Stairway to Heaven. Right? Now get this, right?
That's pretty on point. That's pretty decent.
This new Crow, which is happening, it's coming out in a couple of months' time, right? It's been in. How long do you think that it's been officially in development to just do a remake of The Crow?
I do know the Jason Momoa pictures were going around the internet about 6 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah,
I was going to say seven.
Yeah,
this film has been.
They look pretty good. They were more in keeping with the look from the original than this look.
This reboot has been in development since the year 2008.
Yeah. I've heard it. A recession busting legendary. Epic.
Bradley Cooper at one point was
Mark Wahlberg. Bradley Cooper. I swear to God, Mark Wahlberg was in talks. Bradley Cooper had signed on. Apparently, all these projects fell apart. Jason Momoa, Jack Huston. Possibly somebody else, and now
Ben Hur is Jack Huston,
as he's known. Yeah. Man, remember the summer of Ben Hur, the remake? Unbelievable!
Is your soundtrack to The Camino that year?
in many respects, it still is. I think they went for Alexander Skarsgård. He went no, and then he's like, "But my brother might do it." And Bill Skarsgård said, "Yeah, I'll do it." So he's in it now. It's taken this long to make it. It's going to be bad, but I'll be there day one. I am. I looked at like the kind of the press release bump around this trailer coming out, right? And like everything feels like it was written by ChatGPT. It's nuts. So FKA Twigs, of course, wonderful artist. Previous, of course, recipient on No Encore of the song and album of the year, I believe it was. Back
was Magdalene
was the album.
Incredible
and
record.
Cellophane was the song. She says, and I quote, and again, just tell me if this sounds like a real human being. I am so thrilled to be in The Crow alongside the talented Bill Skarsgård and extraordinary director Rupert Sanders. The love Bill and I share on screen is effortless and indicative of the authenticity and ease that I dream to bring into the role of Shelley. Eric and Shelley's unbreakable unity is so profound and beautiful.
No.
something I hope we all feel at least once as part of the human experience. I am so excited.
The human experience.
I am so excited that the trailer is being unveiled, and even more excited to have the world see the film this summer.
No.
That was not written by...
Not a human being.
A human being, yeah, no.
Okay, so, like, what these quotes remind me of, like, you know those, like, it's 3 a.m. and you're surfing around the TV, like, back in the day, and they'd have, like, Champions League Weekly on or something, or, like,
magazine.
You know,
the magazine show is still on.
Or, like, Football Mundial or something. And they'd have, like, a thing where it's, like, coming up, it's like, you know, Sampdoria have a new sensation signed from, you know, some country where English is not the first language. Yeah. And then there'll be like an interview with the guy. He'll be talking in his native tongue. And as he starts talking, the audio will fade down. And you get the English man dubbing him. And it always had this certain cadence to it.
Yeah.
And so like this is what these quotes remind me of. So here's Bill Skarsgård. And it's kind of like, I was a huge fan of the original film growing up as a kid and was so honored to take on the role of Eric Draven. But what really drew me to it was what Rupert Sanders wanted to do with it. And he goes on, like, he goes, working with the remarkably talented FKA Twigs was magical. It's like no one talks like
that. They're just rephrasings of each other's press release. Like.
I'm looking forward to working with the human, Rupert Sanders. I mean Rupert Sanders.
I was like, I can't wait for the world to see the film, and hopefully it resonates with audiences as strongly as it did with those of us involved.
That's funny.
So it used to be that, like, some PR person would put together this slop before it went out, like, but now it's clearly they've become surplus to requirements, so now just slap it into that generator and we're set.
Rupert Sanders said, I am very pleased to have worked with two young actors
two young humans
whose performances are the backbone of this film. Bill Skarsgård is so committed and vulnerable, monstrously violent and delicately tender. He brings so many layers to the complex emotion of a man consumed with so much love and hate, but also a man who will do anything for the woman he loves. He fights numb with pain and grief, killing and maiming for the one he loves, but to what end? FKA Twigs brings the same unique and wondrous talent that she does to her entire volume of work, and her performance and the vacuum created by her absence undoubtedly gives reason for this crow to be born. Come on!
Remember the...
Is crow capitalized?
It is.
Oh, yes!
It actually is.
Absolutely incredible.
Remember the Batman Begins TV spot?
Oh.
He fights for justice.
No, it's he fights for family and lives for love on the next Batman. Yeah, and it's unbelievable. Maybe we can throw it in here.
Yeah.
Keep watching Back to Back Batman. And tonight, an ABC Family premiere event.
It's not who I am underneath, but what I do that defines me.
It's a new kind of beginning for a legendary hero.
Does it come in black?
He fights for family and lives for love.
Did you see the Alex Proyas tweet?
So Alex Proyas directed the original Crow film, and he's been very protective about it, about any reboot ever since. I haven't seen this,
which he alludes to in the tweet itself. You know, he is, and it does sound like it's written by a human being. Conversely,
a human.
But yeah, he kind of mentions a lot about how it's this one this one property just shouldn't be remade because of what happened and the legacy of it and what it means as a piece of art. Now, for a guy who's made Knowing and Gods of Egypt, yeah, I mean, it's hard to have any sympathy with him. But like, he did make Dark City and The Crow as well, so. He
was like, I finished that film for Brandon. You know, it's so important to preserve his memory
and it doesn't unmake it. So
no, I mean, it's fine.
We are in those times where everything until Bob Gale dies. Back to the Future. It will, when he dies, when Bob Gale and Zemeckis die, Back to the Future will be remade. It's a fact.
Great. Can't wait.
Back to 1997, yes. Everybody.
Overrated franchise, if you ask me. But The Crow, however, it's going to be terrible, but I'm there day one. So there we go. I mean, will you go see it?
No.
Do you like the original?
It's fine. Yeah, no, like you said, the scenes show... When you know what happened, the seams start to show quite a bit. It is missing certain emotional beats because they didn't have them there. So they try to make do with a couple of kind of early computer fixes with the doubles and faces. But it doesn't really hold together.
There's a scene where he's tooling up, and it's when the Cure song is playing, and it's you don't see a shot of his face until the very end, and it's like it was the stuntman. It was actually Chad Stahelski.
Oh, okay.
Of John Wick directorial fame. Ex stuntman, of course he was, but I think Brian Lee's really fun in the role. He's got some really good deliveries. I love when he's like, he's going through like the names of the characters, and he's like Fun Boy, and he's like he goes a whole jolly club, a jolly pirate nickname. So I'm like, he had something. He really fucking did. Like, he should be the villain in a terrible Expendables movie right about now. You know, That should have been the legacy.
That's a terrible thing to say about him, Dave.
It would have been a nice paycheck for him, you know? I'd be okay with that. Did you see it in the cinema?
I'd like to see him as an eccentric billionaire in Succession or something, you know, an old
Brandon Lee.
Yeah, you know, like in the 60s, and I'd like to have him a bit more meat in his bones than getting.
He would have been in action movies, and that would be it.
No,
I mean,
because he was actually, like, if you ever see Showdown in Little Tokyo, he's very good, he's very funny, he's very, and like he had charisma. He wasn't just really, really great at kicking people's asses.
Yeah, I suppose. Mm. Did you see The Crow in the cinema, is the question?
No. We're of the Empire magazine generation, so we followed its production. We followed everything about it, but in the end, I never got to see it.
That's fair. I mentioned that Nine Inch Nails are on the soundtrack to The Crow. They do a cover of Dead Souls, the Joy Division song. It's a really good cover. I also noticed that last week, kind of slipped through my fingers at first, but The Guardian, Ben Beaumont Thomas of The Guardian, who's their music editor, did a ranking of the 20 best Nine Inch Nails songs on the wake of The Downward Spiral turning 30 years of age. It's not a bad list, I will say. I kind of went into this, you know, being like, here
tempered expectations. Yeah.
I mean, like, it's not, I'm not going to go through it because, you know, it's the 20 fucking songs here, but like, it's actually decent. It's very recent. There's a lot of recency bias here, which kind of surprised me. Although, no prizes for guessing. Sure enough, Hurt is number one. I think it's a good list. You know, I think if you're getting into Nine Inch Nails, it'd be worth looking up and just, you know, listen to that Spotify playlist. But I will say that my own personal favorite Nine Inch Nails song, Right Where It Belongs, is not on the list at all. So
I was just about to say, did it feature?
Nope, not once.
I'm scrolling through the list as we speak.
It's a good list. There's time made for, you know, kind of stuff off the Ghosts records and so on and so forth. But, you know, as these things go...
Do you think Hurt would be there if it wasn't for his legacy?
Well, all the comments were like, you know, they had the predictable enough, you know, the Johnny Cash version is better, boom, 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 boom. And like, the Johnny Cash version is amazing. Mm. You know, it is incredible. I rewatched Logan recently, and I think the trailer with the Johnny Cash song in it is better than the film itself.
I only saw it once. Was it in the film, the song?
No, it's just in the trailer.
No.
But it's used perfectly in the trailer. It's a beautiful song. I mean, I had that kind of rebellion for a while where I was like, you know, I was in the other direction at first. I thought the Johnny Cash song was better. I thought Nine Inch Nails were muck. And then I got into Nine Inch Nails, of course, off the back of seeing a live version I heard on my television screen from Reading 2007. And it was just heart-stoppingly beautiful. I know people, you know, like it's common parlance to say that the Cash version's better because it's about a life lived and et cetera, et cetera. And maybe it is. And Reznor himself is very, very magnanimous about all that kind of stuff. But I think the pendulum may have swung too far in the other direction where we kind of dismissed the original. It's like, the original is unbelievable song.
Well, now it's getting its due, you know, if it's number one, if it's the best, voted the best Nine Inch Nails song of all time.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone's a critic, you know, aren't they? And speaking of, this blew my mind, right? So, did you know that the man who attempted to assassinate US President Ronald Reagan...
The folk musician, John Hinckley.
Yes.
Yeah, why would you bring that? Okay. What have you got to say about the folk musician John Hinckley?
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, you know what I've done there? Like that's character assassination right there. That's what that is. So yeah, you're right. 68-year-old struggling troubadour, folk musician John Hinckley Jr., who's just trying to get a gig. Right,
he keeps getting gigs and they keep getting cancelled when they find out he tried to shoot Ronald Reagan.
It's unbelievable. So,
oh no, sorry, he tried to shoot Ronald Reagan to impress Jodie Foster.
That's right, yeah, yeah. Can you give the backstory on that?
Well, that's all I know, really.
Okay.
You know, that he was obsessed with her and he tried to impress her by shooting Ronald Reagan. And he did shoot him, and he survived.
I mean, look, we've all been there, right?
We've all been there.
Like, we all had our celebrity crushes. And I'm like, what can I do?
Who can I shoot to impress?
I just want to see that moment of realization in a promoter's eyes when he goes, do you know who the fuck you just booked for this Thursday night? Who? John Hinckley. Is like, yeah, I listened to his demo. It's pretty good. Like, you know.
So last year, right, he released his debut album. Do you know what it's called?
Debut album?
Yeah, do you know what it's called?
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
No, it's called Redemption.
Okay.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
And he's been trying to tour. I say the word trying because he can't get booked.
He can't get a gig. Well, you can get a gig, you just can't play the gig.
He was slated to perform later this month in Connecticut at the Hotel Huxley in Naugatuck, Connecticut.
And everyone's favourite.
It was postponed. It's also the 43rd anniversary of the shooting.
To the day.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So he went on Twitter and he said, it just said, my concert in Connecticut has been postponed. Like, this keeps happening. So, of course, he is, you know, he began writing music while he was in a psychiatric facility in Washington, D.C. He was institutionalized from the early 1980s up until 2016, when it was discovered that he suffered from acute psychosis. He was acquitted of the shooting by reason of insanity and was given a full freedom in 2022. So he served his time.
Which I think was kind of glossed over. I mean, no one really paid attention to this.
Oh, I hadn't a clue this happened.
No, yeah. Like, it's, yeah, we kind
and
of.
And obviously, he was.
Small news.
Judged to not be of a dangerous society, and I'm glad he's out and all that. It's just. The, now,
you're glad
and,
he's out.
Well, no, like, you know, he didn't. It wasn't his fault. He didn't do anything.
Someone had tickets to the Connecticut show.
Yeah. He said, I know I'm known for an act of violence, but I'm a completely different person than in 1981. I stand for peace now.
Yeah, good for him.
He previously tried to play in Hamden, Connecticut in April 2022, but the show was cancelled. Venue location was Miramas, away from where he stalked Jodie Foster at Yale University. Good stuff. So let's see what else.
Different state, maybe.
And his sold out.
He could come to certain countries in Europe and he'd be welcomed.
Yep. His sold out show in Brooklyn in 2022 was also cancelled.
Oh, God.
So what do you do? Like, I mean...
When faced with the woke mob, David, who want to cancel presidential assassins from playing
well,
there.
He wasn't successful. I rewatched, I was saying to Adam there, I rewatched JFK, Oliver Stone's JFK the other day. That's a motion picture right there.
It really is. It's a work of pure fiction, but it's wonderful. It's fantastic.
What's your favourite part about it? John Candy.
No, the build up to back to build up to when the Warren Commission. It's not the Warren Commission. The
Zapruder film.
Yeah, the build up to that. And it is quite like it is. You know, as a tweet said, what if JFK's head just did that?
if you want to see John F. Kennedy's head get blown apart, this is the film for you. Hell of a movie, though. Yeah, pure hokum, but the pace entertaining.
And the way it builds up to that moment is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know?
Kevin Costner's absolutely outstanding in it.
He really is.
His voice cracking under the emotion of it all at the end. Oh, God, it's killer. Yeah. But seriously, John Candy pops up for like two scenes as this bizarre sunglasses wearing, you know, he's Southern like, dandy.
His accent's as thick as molasses. And he's there. He's
like, they're going to stomp all over your hair, Jim. Yeah? It's unbelievable. It's fucking.
A friend of mine has his own kind of white suit wearing Southern.
Like Simpsons character.
Yeah, yeah,
like.
Called Encore Cousteau. <He's> like, <"No." laughs> Hi, Alex, if you listen. Encore Cousteau. I declare things.
I do declare.
I'm just over here declaring things.
It's absolutely wonderful. Let me ask you this, right? You know, I know the Galaxy is 6 feet under at the moment, but. I mean.
Just say we're not banned anymore.
I got to find, you know, second mentions, elegant variations, you know? You're on ice. You know,
yes,
in cryosleep, like Demolition Man.
There's a movie.
That's a flick right there. Yeah. Simon Phoenix, Murder, Death, Kill. So the question is, but you know, you are once a songwriter, right? Mm. Always a songwriter. Would you sign up for a songwriting and recording course that was headed up by
John Hinckley?
Yes,
is the answer.
How to Impress a Celebrity, that's module 4. Carl Barat of the Libertines and Kyle Falconer of The View, last seen attacking one of his own bandmates on stage.
Actually,
last
seen by me.
Oh, that's
weeks
right.
later, yeah. Weeks after that happened.
Yeah.
And there was no attacking involved. It was a lovely show.
I think we're talking about the kind of people who sign up for that, students, whatever, would be older boys. Want to meet the hero and play guitar with them, you know? Lads in the 40s and, you know, that's who were around when when the Libertines were around. Yeah, I know.
The Libertines are back. They have a new album coming out imminently. But they've signed up for this getaway, a luxury songwriting camp based in Spain. The name of the organization is La Sierra Casa. I can only assume that
this translates to pay for my fucking holiday.
Yeah, this is going to be a grift. This is a grift, isn't it?
I can only assume that
this is a grift.
I can only assume that.
I expect to see a picture on Twitter of an open polystyrene container
with
bread and cheese. Like, look what I just got at the Carl Barrett and what's the other guy's name?
Carl Falconer.
Carl Falconer, songwriting retreat.
But like, you know? La Sierra Casa, it conjures up imagery of, you know, like sunshine and maybe like a flowing fountain of cerveza cristal. I'm still not tired of that meme.
It's wonderful.
It's the greatest meme of the year.
We shared them all, Dave. Back
it's
and forth.
Fucking. It's just, this is why you have to go see Dune Part 2, Adam, to appreciate the majesty of the Cerveza Cristal meme.
Okay, perfect. I can't wait.
They say at La Sierra Songwriting Camp, we are the number one stop for all things songwriting. Dive in headfirst and gain confidence in writing from industry experts. Work one on one with successful established artists. Whether this is your first rodeo or you want to shake off your writer's block, La Sierra is the place for you. We aim for you to come away with 3 to 4 songs, which you will have the chance to pitch to major publishers. We have a vast range of high-end industry experts who will share their tips from recording to promotion and management. So there you go.
It's a grift.
Well, I mean, like you say, it's a griff, but they say it's in a quote authentic.
And what if I didn't write a single song and I didn't get my, you know, what's your point of last recourse?
It's in a authentic cave house nestled amongst the golden hillsides of southeast Spain in the quiet town of El Zinole, which is a 45-minute drive from the picturesque port of Alicante that boasts daily flights to and from the UK.
you're doing the robot voice again.
That's what it says. I don't know. I mean, songwriting camps, I've never been to one. Adam, like, you know, have you ever attended such things, workshops, etc.?
I have, and to be fair, I think there's definitely more legit ones happening in County Cavan than there is in Alicante. No, I have been to them before. They are a good experience, especially if you're kind of in the early stages of your career as a musician or a songwriter, or even a producer like I was at the time. It's a fun way to just kind of like, it's a fun exercise, you know, it's like a fun.
Was
thing
this
to
celebrity
kind of,
camp?
No, it absolutely.
Oh,
was
just
not.
With a kind of a proven.
No, it was like a couple of heads for, like, there was a couple of producers I knew, it was a couple of musicians who came in and out, and we were just all writing, and a couple of writers then who were like just writers, and we were all kind of like mixing and matching and like swapping around every 4 hours and stuff and trying to kind of speed run it a little bit, which was fun. It was a fun exercise, but yeah, I just aren't buying what they're selling here at all.
That's fair. Well, you know, I'm sure others will, and that's the nature absolutely. Of a grift.
Yeah, but like I said, lads who were in their mid to late 40s who were huge fans of the Libertines will want to go to that just to spend time with them. Yeah. And you know, with my dream to play a song with Carl Barrett, that's, yeah, go for it.
We might try, you know, maybe we should send Craig off to
divorcees.
You know?
Also,
he's not a divorcee.
Not divorced blokes.
Yeah,
yeah,
I understand.
Yeah, it's like your dad's
taking a divorce.
Your dad's taking a divorce. Well, he's paying for a songwriting workshop with Carl Barrett.
He's going to come away with 3 to 4 songs. He's going to pitch them to real publishers.
Yeah. And human publishers from management.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to leave sunny Spain behind now for our top five this week, and we're going to travel. I feel like I'm on like holiday. The BBC
to
show. We're going to travel to Antibes, the seaside city in France. It's time to talk about M83. An act that I have been obsessed with for a very, very long time. Again, I mentioned my aforementioned friend Adam. Back in the day, Adam made me a bunch of kind of mix CDs. And I remember he put Don't Say Was From the Flames by M83 on one of them. And I was like, what is this? Like, I've never heard anything like this before. This is incredible. And from there, you know, got into the band, became a big fan. And I saw them in 2008 in Dublin when they came to that Andrews Lane Theatre gig. My memory of that gig, by the way, apart from it being a fun show, was like, there were all these like scene kids, all these kind of hip, young, bright, young, beautiful things, like sitting apathetically, dead-eyed against the wall.
Who was supporting?
I have no idea who was supporting, but it was like Cy Schroeder, maybe, possibly?
No, I think it was Butterfly Explosion, was it, maybe?
I can't remember. But it was like,
I'll check.
But I just remember there were these scene kids like sitting and like lining against the wall, and it was almost like they were doing a reminiscent of the cover of Saturday's Equal Youth. They weren't. They were just like hipsters.
It was the tour for Saturday's
Equal
Youth, wasn't it?
It was. I can still remember the fucking ticket. It was like that kind of you know, red bordered thing with the.
You and I know that it is basically one man and a host of really, really accomplished session musicians.
But it wasn't always. I mean, like when this project began, right? So Anthony Gonzalez is M83, essentially, for all intents and purposes. If you look up M83, you know, I'm sure whatever image we use for the episode may well have him in it. But it began as a duo. It was Anthony Gonzalez and a guy called Nicolas Fromageau. And they formed, I guess, they kind of met up when they were young, and they initially were into kind of post-rock, and from there, they just became this kind of duo. And like the first two M83 records...
It is a pair of them.
Yeah. Is the pair of them.
The first one was a self-titled debut, which was... you can kind of tell it's every idea they had at the time.
Yeah.
Some of it's kind of almost big beat. It's not great. It's not canon even for me.
I think that's a wild thing to say. Yeah, I think that first album has gold and then their hills. And I like back in 2014 for Drowned in Sound, also in cryogenic stores these days, Drowned in Sound, I reviewed the reissues of the first three records, and it was a real treat and going back to it. And I kind of, you know, formed my own very pretentious narrative. Well, in fairness, if you're going to write about M83 long form, you kind of got to get pretentious. You kind of got to get heart in your sleeve, because that's what this music is. And I loved just like the kind of the basics of it. Like I loved just kind of how, as you say, like let's throw everything at this.
Do you like Pablo Honey?
by Radiohead. I think there for a second. I've never been the biggest Radiohead guy. So,
okay,
like,
yeah.
I mean,
so,
like,
because the first album I heard from Radiohead was The Bends, and then when I eventually heard Tablet Honey, I was like,
"What is this?
What is this?" So that's what it was like for me, because I was so crazy for Dead Cities and Running to Flowers and In Church and, you know, all the noise and everything, all the songs in the album, that when I went back, I was like, they have another record? This is even before the third album, which I think, are we calling that the blockbuster? I mean, you'll say because of Midnight City that Hurry Up We're Dreaming is their blockbuster album, but it's not, or double album, but it's not. Is the big blockbuster box office one for you Before the Dawn Heals Us?
It is Before the Dawn. Yeah, absolutely. And in fairness,
album number three, by the way.
I should say as well, listener, I'm talking to a man who has the name of that album.
I do have two ME3 tattoos.
He's got two ME3 tattoos, they are including artwork. Before the Dawn Heals Us in the font written on his arm, which, by the way, I'm still thinking about getting tattooed as well. Yeah, no, the third album is, I think, the masterpiece.
It is. Yeah.
But like, as it goes on, you know, like the height of my fandom, like, you know, you mentioned Hurry Up We're Dreaming, we heard Midnight City at the start of the show. That's an interesting album. It's a bit, like he's gotten more and more.
Hurry Up We're Dreaming.
Yeah.
It should only be a single
record. I agree.
Record.
Yeah. It's too much.
There's a lot of filler on there, which for me, who's also, we'll probably get to this, who was also into the very kind of atmospheric, ambient, almost drone-like quality of some of the stuff that he has done on both his ambient albums. That's okay with me, but I don't think it's good enough for a double record. I get the appeal. You
I
know?
Feel like I worry that we've immediately gone inside baseball here. I didn't mean to, but before we kick off your list, and I guess you can kind of, you know, tell the story as we go.
Oh yeah, my list.
But yeah,
I need to remember the order as well.
I have no idea what you've picked. Okay. Now the reason I've sat this one out is because I've picked numerous M83 tracks and top fives over the years, and I wanted to kind of just get someone else's perspective. I mean, I'm happy to throw in some kind of sheds of my own, and I will as well. We'll put in the show notes. I'll put in a playlist that I made before for Craig, actually, so I'll share that now with all of you, listener. But before we get going, like I say, band forms, two lads, eventually becomes Anthony Gonzalez. Your man Nicholas Fromageau leaves. It's hard to kind of find if it was a massive, you know, fight, but it seems to be that it was creative differences. It was your classic creative differences.
There was something that happened after that, which was it did become a solo project for Anthony Gonzalez, but also he brought on two musicians in particular. Louis Mahon was the drummer. Now the drummer, as soon as you hear Moonchild, as soon as you hear that drum intro, it's over. You're like, I'm into a whole new sphere here. This is not the band from Dead Cities, but it's a whole bigger thing. And a guy called Jordan Lawler, the guitar player. Now they don't play with him anymore. They're not on the new album, and it shows.
Yeah, there's also a vocalist called Morgan Kibbe.
Morgan Kibbe came in for Saturday's Youth,
and she's there for a bit afterwards. Yeah, so.
But once Louis Mahon and Jordan Lawler came in, I think the sound really did start to sound like a live band, but also like a full unit and able to do justice to what he had in his mind.
Yeah,
which as you said for Before the Dawn Heals Us is a complete spectacular box office masterpiece of an album.
It's skyscraping. I mean, like I always describe this music as incredibly emotive, incredibly cinematic, incredibly beautiful, and like reaching for the stars. And like, it's the name M83. It's named after a spiral galaxy. Like, it's all about looking up and trying to kind of ascend, I think. Like, that's kind of what it's always been for me. Before we kick off your list, like, can you remember the first time you heard this act?
Well, it was the same thing happened twice in my life. It was hearing it from the other room and coming in and saying what the fuck is that? And my friend at the time, Alex, just said it's M83, kind of a French electronic duo. It's Running to Flowers, I heard, and I was just like, yes, absolutely. It's like when the first time I heard I heard NYC from Interpol in the next room, and you know, when it breaks down in the middle and you kind of just hear the guitar and the drums come in, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, what the fuck is that? It was probably only twice in my life I was like, what the fuck is that? And for me, it was like, yeah, okay, I got to go get that record. I got to listen to it. It did not disappoint. And then from then on, there was a peak of my love and fandom. And then it's slightly kind of come down a little bit in the last couple of years from the last few records. But it was 2003, summer 2003, when I first heard Running to Flowers, which is not what's coming up, by the way.
Good.
My first.
Do you want to kick off your list?
I will.
It's up to you if you want to like tell us outright what the title is, or if you want to like give us a bit of mystery.
Well,
what would you prefer?
I'm going to descend. Now, what I've done here is I haven't picked Midnight City because it's, you know, it's everyone knows. I think it's someone told me it's the soundtrack to the theme tune for maybe
Made in Chelsea.
Made in Chelsea.
Okay,
yeah.
So I wasn't aware of that.
It's the song that people who don't know them love, and it is. Like, I think it's an amazing song.
Yes, and who thought it was their debut? It was his debut single. You know, his debut single in 2011. That's 12 years after M83 was formed. But what I've picked is something that. It's very simple, it's very effective, but it's also got the scale and the bombast, as you said, the skyscraping quality that I want would be a good introduction to the band. There's no vocals in it because, for me, a lot of the time there's no vocals in my favourite tracks from the band, but it was released as a teaser for Hurry Up, We're Dreaming. It was a video that went up and it was this. Echoes of mine from Hurry Up, We're Dreaming. It's like to quote Spinal Tap, simple lines intertwining. You know, it's very simple. It is just thump, thump, thump with incredibly huge sound guitars, synths, this kind of screaming, kind of high-pitched vocal noise that he uses time to time. It's very simple. That it's only about 3 minutes long, but for me, that's a good introduction because what you're introduced to here is the scale of it, the size of it, you know, vastness. And the teaser I spoke of is beautiful. If you can look it up on YouTube, the Echoes of Mine teaser for Hurry Up, We're Dreaming was just kind of shots of, you know, he loves concrete, he loves cities, he loves all this stuff. And it is just ascending shots of buildings and skyscrapers and all this kind of stuff. It's quite beautiful.
Yeah. At that point, though, I mean, I guess my question is, like, what do we want as fans? What do we want from this act? Because, I mean, like, I remember... the first time I threw on this record, I think I got like an advanced copy of it for review or something, and I threw on the opening track intro, which is amazing. And I remember where I was. I remember I was in Drogheda. I remember the street I was walking down. And I remember like the first time it kicked in, I was like, I'm about to go on a journey with this record. And it wasn't, in the end, it wasn't quite the journey I wanted to be, because I think that album
is the first song on the album.
Long.
On the album is like is intro, which is even bigger. It was literally this or intro. And I couldn't find a clip that really did it justice because it's such a builder.
Yeah.
It's got Zola Jesus in there singing.
Incredible.
Incredible voice. Yeah. And her and Anthony Gonzalez mix quite well together vocally. It is unbelievable. It's probably arguably the better song, but for me, this is the one.
I'm curious, like in this kind of, you know, like this maze of a double album.
Yeah.
Like, because like this would not be in my top five from the album.
So I'm just
curious, like what it is about this one.
It is that sense of scale and just that, like that it's never been a virtuoso of a guitar player or even a synth player, you know. He's never had like a crazy kind of intricate designs. It was always just about power and mood and melody and it's moving, and that's what I get from it. I get the same thing from intro and some of the other tracks on the album, but this one for me just gets the scale right, the size of it.
Is Hurry Up, We're Dreaming one of their better albums?
It's too long. It's a single album. Interesting piece would probably be us putting together a single album from the double album.
Yeah, yeah. I think would be a non-sequitur.
I love the ambient kind of side of things and the emotion and the kind of like soft kind of atmospheric stuff is great, but I just don't think it ties together well as an album.
Yeah, it feels like his reach exceeded his grasp on that one.
It's like if Don't Look Back in Anger. Don't Look Back in Anger. Sorry. It's like if What's the Story, Morning Glory was two albums and there was like three or four Swamp songs on it rather than one Swamp song.
That's way too harsh.
The best Oasis song that's ever existed.
If you had like four or five tracks like Swamp Song on the double album that is What's the Story, Morning Glory.
Listen, that album regularly tops the Radio X best British album of all time. And, you know, I'm not seeing anybody...
Definitely Maybe's better.
I'm not seeing anybody come out, you know, for or against the Swamp Songs.
There like 20 Oasis songs in the top, like...
top 100. Yeah. I think it was more than 20. Yeah,
more than an album's worth. It was an obscene amount.
Yeah, it's good stuff. You're never going to find M83 in there. Not just because they're not British, but because, you know, this isn't really their thing.
Yeah, with M83, like, I do think that this is a great example of the grandiosity of it all.
Scale,
and the theatre almost of it too. Like, it almost like feels like a church hymn or something to me.
Yes, because the first The opening, the intro of it, yeah, absolutely it does. Mm. And it's got kind of that sampled kind of French vocal and all that.
Hammond organ as well.
Yeah, it's just so evocative of a place I've never even been. I just love it, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And of course, it also has that, which is often there, is particularly from Before the Dawn Heals Onward, that kind of sci-fi element, that kind of extra kind of otherworldliness.
We'll get into this, but he's obsessed with his teenage years.
Well, he really, really fucking is.
But by his own admission, he's obsessed with the life he had as a teenager, which is 5 years growing up in Antibes, France, where he sounds like every day was just paradise. And I have a hard time relating to that as someone who grew up in 1980s Ireland. I'm north side of Dublin in the 1980s, but...
Wasn't as picturesque as cinematic.
I don't begrudge him it, but I love to be in your head for this, because mine, it was a fucking hellhole, you know? But I love to be where he is, because he does say he grew up like kind of quite upper middle class in this paradise town.
He reminds me of like a Bret Easton Ellis character, if Bret Easton Ellis was French. Like it's so French, it's so kind of like...
Yeah, he's quite surly.
I bet he wore like, you know, like pristine clothes all the time.
Yeah.
Crisp white t-shirts.
Had like many lovers, all that kind of shit, you know?
But like it comes across. I mean, not only from literally the artwork from some of the albums, or the titles of some of the albums, but that infuses all his work, even the most recent album.
Oh yeah,
you know, this obsession with his 5 or 6 year period that he had growing up in the south of France.
Okay, well look, so Echoes of Mine is your number five from the album Hurry Up, We're Dreaming. Take us to your number four, please.
My number four, I got to remember. Oh, well, this one I think Dave might be more obvious to you, just because it's one of the more popular, better tracks from Saturday's Youth. It's probably my favourite track from the album, of which there are a few. Again, if I was to pick probably from my heart, it would be the one that I'd listen to most would be Colours. The kind of Joy Division, New Ordery kind of thing right in the middle of it. It's about 8 minutes long. It builds and builds and builds and builds. There's a little bit of vocals at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's probably like the one I put on most. But this one is, as soon as you hear the opening bars, which I edited this clip so you would actually hear the opening couple of bars properly. So this is my next one. This is We on the Sky. Come on, Dave. Every single element of that audio gets to you, right?
Oh yeah,
stab, every single synth pad.
The arpeggio is so good.
Yeah, it's so good, and like it's got everything that you could want. Like, if I did hear, if I had never heard this band before, and I heard that 30-second clip, I'm like, well, you got to give me some more of whatever this guy's doing, even with his whispering kind of shoegazy French and his really heavy French accent that he sings English in. It's all there for me.
So yeah, this is We Own the Sky from the album Saturdays Equal Youth, which is the fifth album, I believe, 2008.
Yes, and I tried to find the best clip from that one, and I didn't manage to squeeze in Morgan Kibbe, who was a vocalist who he brought on live and for the studio album.
She's awesome.
She's awesome on that song in particular, especially the outro.
Yeah.
I wish I could fit her in, but I wanted to get in the synths and the kind of, you know, the real feeling of, and also to hear his vocals, because he doesn't do it often. Sometimes he leans in harder to it. He's a good vocalist, but I wanted to get people to hear, like, you know, because it's funny, even with the chorus or Midnight City, it's no words. It's just that I'm not going to do the sound. Everyone else the sound, right?
Yeah, it's a tectonic yelp. Yeah, you could say, you know.
But I wanted to hear that he does have something vocally that I love.
Yeah, and I guess more and more as the albums went on, his vocals kind of came out from hiding, so to speak.
Yeah, I think
very treated, obviously, you know, it's kind of like, you know, he's definitely giving himself a lot of help in the studio.
I quite like that, though. I actually really think it almost feels like it's part of the instrumental. I know it's a vocal piece and that's kind of silly and maybe a little bit whatever to say, but like it does feel like it's very much sitting into the world around it, which is just like,
which is tricky,
magnificent.
Which is tricky live, and it doesn't really come together, if I'm honest. I wouldn't say either of the M82 gigs you went to, Dave, were the best gigs of your life.
No.
They're quite, I mean, the drummer plays in this huge kind of Perspex cube.
Which I love,
but also you can tell that they really want to get that studio sound live. They don't want any spill, they want the vocals.
Yeah,
to be
trying to capture it
and
all.
It can come across as quite clinical in a way.
Did they play for Chris Reed twice? twice. I have a weird memory of seeing them there twice, possibly. I do remember like the one times I was there, like it was like only half full.
Yeah,
like,
that was when I was at Channel One. We're supporting then.
That's right.
And that was the only one, I think.
Okay, I have a weird jumble in my head, but I
there was the Body and Soul performance. And I think that's been it since.
So frustrating. You didn't pick a Graveyard Girl off
the
album.
No, Cure infused,
which
slightly.
Is, has that big monologue. You know, it's like waiting for someone to touch me, waiting for someone to hold me.
I'm 15 years old. Yeah. And I'm already too young. I'm already too old for this world.
It's like I'm 15 years old and I can't stand this. It's very like, because this is like up to this point without question his most, and every album is Heart on the Sleeve. I mean, like
it is
very
absolutely no cynicism there.
But even the
point.
Front cover of this, where it's all the kids and the kind of the washed out glow, and they're all dressed up in like fucking skeleton costumes, and you know they look like the Breakfast Club except in France. You know, it's just like, you know, it's all just like, you know, oh, man.
Le petit déjeuner.
Sorry, we could.
Bravo. Bravo to both of you. Oh my God.
Very good, Adam.
Fantastic.
Very good.
I might just go home. I'm clearly not needed for the rest of this. But
the Graveyard Girl stuff, it is entirely sincere. There's no cynicism there whatsoever. Yeah. But, you know, it's not exactly my favorite.
I have to look up the exact lyrics. Talk about Kim and Jesse while I'm doing that, because, of course, that's another.
Well, Kim and Jesse is also, it's about as close as he came to kind of a crossover hit before Midnight City, as far as I can remember. He leaned into this kind of. He went from being kind of more into, say, Depeche Mode and the darker 80s stuff. Into more late 80s Cure and a bit of David smiling and a bit of kind of late 80s New Order as well,
which
worked for him, because
I was going to say he's kind of like the French Bernard Sumner in a way, because like he's not the greatest vocalist but he does enough with it in the song Graveyard Girl. I actually didn't realize this, because even when he sings it can be a bit like hard to know what he's saying. There's like a reference to Molly Ringwald in there, which I didn't realize, which makes perfect sense. But there's in the song Graveyard Girl, which is just like his most emo song possibly, there's this weird interlude where like I don't know if they recorded it, if it's from something, but there's this like kind of, I guess it's meant to be a teenage girl in the concept of this song and the album, and like it's so dramatic, you know, like it's like I'm gonna jump the walls and run, I wonder if they'll miss me. Like something goes, I won't miss them, the cemetery is my home, I want to be a part of it, invisible even to the night, then I read poetry to the stones, maybe one day I could be one of them, wise and silent, waiting for someone to love me, waiting for someone to kiss me. And here's the line, I'm 15 I'm 15 years old and I feel it's already too late to live.
So yeah, this is samples. This is in a kind of an ingenue like, voice.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable.
He sells it and it works.
He does.
It's not. Kim and Jesse it was my preferred kind of like pop up tempo banger from that album.
Yeah.
But still not one of my favorites. But I think We on the Sky has the goosebumps.
It has an amazing ending as well.
It's beautiful.
Morgan Kibbe is incredible in it. Yeah. That kind of like that washed out sound, like that, like that's pure haze. Like that record, like it's just pure. Mm. Like
fog machine in a small space with a strobe light. Yeah.
Like just like the studio.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Like the album is pink and purple in my head for some reason. Yeah. Like it's just kind of, you know, it's such a, you know, dreamlike thing, which I know is the most obvious word to associate with this kind of music, this kind of, you know, shoegaze and kind of just like incredible skyscraping electronica, but it's all in there.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be my favorite MA3 record, but I think it's a very important one, if that makes sense.
I think we know what our favorite is, but you know, who's picked it?
Well, what's your number three? Well, in terms of picks.
Well, we've just covered it, so why don't you just press play and we'll talk about it afterwards.
It's Graveyard Girl.
As you can tell, it's more of an acoustic number.
Yeah, slow ballad.
This is Teen Angst, which is basically what I've been talking about for the last 3 or 4 minutes. But it's just so propulsive. It is on an album that has Car Chase Terror on it. Is that your favorite one, Dave? Oh, no,
Car Chase Terror.
Oh, sorry, Guitar and a Heart.
A Guitar and a Heart is easily.
I'm sorry, I do apologize. I thought about it, but I thought in terms of, because Cartridge at Heart is such a full piece, you need to listen to the whole thing.
100%, yeah.
You need to listen to all 5.5 minutes of it, because it builds up so heavy and so hard.
You got to unlock that kick in when he starts playing like the hats and the ride cymbal at the same time. I think, which I copied as a drummer, by the way. Like, I was so, I'm going to rip this guy off.
I came out of Vicar Street and the bouncer was like, he was like, did you like that? Like, he was like, did you think that was good? And I was like, yeah, I thought it was really good, mate. And he was like, oh, like, you know, well, the last one was unreal. And it was...
Teen Angst.
No, the last song was a really, really long version of Guitar and Heart.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if I won this guy over, well, that was pretty good. But I loved it. Did you actually like that? It's like when I walked into Alan Partridge in Three Arena there a couple of years ago, and the guy, one of the bouncers, had no idea that this was all meant to be a parody. A bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, did you actually think he was good? And I was like, yes. Like, so at one point, Partridge was walking around.
Imagine texting his mate, this guy's bombing on stage. Yeah. Right?
They're all laughing. Yeah, all these
clowns think he's hilarious.
Anyway, sorry, this song is called Teen Angst. It's from the album.
It's from...
Before the Dawn Heals. You got a tattooed on your arm. No.
It is the centerpiece for me. Even though what we deal with, in Moonchild and all the big stuff before that, this one hits really hard, really heavy, really, really exciting. Just really, and has the emotional feel, as you can tell from the chorus there. It's so it's goosebumps.
It's a runaway freight train. Mm. Yeah, very much so. And like, there's lots of these kind of moments of incredible abandon on this album, you know. Yeah. But there is, it's an album of very different moods, I think. Because obviously Moonchild is the opening track, and it's just this, again, you know, this ascent.
Top Gear favourite.
Is that right?
They used to use it all the time.
On Top Gear.
Going across all these different countries to the montage. Well,
if there was a suspension bridge and they were driving across it, it was... And then it would kick in. I swear to God. I'm
genuinely surprised at this. Oh my God. But yeah, like the way that the record goes along, I mean, like, there's lots and lots of just runaway stuff. I mean, like, Mick is referring to a later track, A Guitar and a Heart. There's also a track called Car Chase Terror, which is actually genuinely unnerving.
Has featured on a top five before?
I think I picked it in Scary Songs, possibly. Because it
is also what should seem like a goof, but it's not at all. I find it incredibly moving, which is Can't Stop.
Yeah.
In the middle of it.
Do-do-do.
Yeah, it's like 2.5 minutes of just... And how I take this music seriously, but I do, because it doesn't sound initially when you hear it. If you can, just put it on at home now and listen to it. It sounds incredibly goofy, but it works on me. And as does Lower Your Eyelids to Dive
the
Sun.
That's just unbelievable. Yeah,
it is like, probably the greatest... up there with... what was the song you mentioned earlier from The Horrors? Sea Within a Sea?
Yeah.
Up there, one of the greatest album outros I've ever heard.
Oh no, you're thinking of Something to Remember Me By. Oh,
no.
Beloved.
No.
Sea Within Sea. Sorry, yeah.
Sorry, as in the one of the greatest album outros ever.
Yes, sorry.
Including Lower Your Eyelids to Die With the Sun.
Yeah. A perfect record before the Dawn Heals Us, like a flawless record, do you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for me, yes.
Okay, for me.
Because there'll always be the kind of the odd goofy number. And I mean, are we going to talk about Junk?
We'll talk about Junk. Do you want to talk about Junk now?
I think if you just Google image Junk, the M83, you'll see whatever the fuck he was doing.
Junk talk. So you have to imagine, listener, that, you know, at the height of our M83 fandom, when it's just banger after banger, you know, even the double album, it's still, it's too much album, but my God, there's so many highlights. And then, you know, here comes Junk, and it's like this bizarre album cover, which looks like it has like these kind of like leftover
Play-Doh
things, like children's cartoons.
It's a child's cartoon.
It's fucking
kind of like a stuck together animation for a cheap children's program.
It's like Worker and Parasite from like the French edition. You know, it's like what are we doing? And then, you know, like, don't worry. But then here's a track called Fifi the Dog.
I think he had he had like a little Shitzu or something as a cover of one of the
of the lead single. Do a Try.
The whole album feels like a joke.
Yeah.
But it's not a funny one. No. There is no humor to it at all.
When that first single came out, like Do a Try, I remember listening to it and I was like, okay, where's the real song?
Yeah.
That's got to be a gag. And then, of course, no, it's pretty terrible. There's barely two tracks on there that are even passable. But like, and then, of course, you know, much to our chagrin.
The Great Betrayal.
The greatest of betrayals. He goes on, is it Kimmel or is it Fallon?
It's Kimmel.
And he goes on fucking Kimmel, right? And he does one of the is it do a tryout?
Yeah. Before we tell him what it is, let's say that the effort
the effort that they
made with his face and his head is extraordinary.
It really is.
It must have taken fucking hours.
So, and again, like I say, you know, you might say, listen, fair play, you know, he ripped up the script book there, you know, he did. Fucking, you know, Hurry Up or Dream and Midnight City was a massive hit. He ends up working on a Tom Cruise movie. He doesn't enjoy it. People know him now, you know. It's M83. What's he going to do next?
Yeah.
And he does this fucking dreadful album and he goes on Kimmel and he's dressed like fucking Teen Wolf.
He's dressed like Teen Wolf. And I'm not saying like he's wearing like, you know, a goofy wig and all that. He's probably dressed like Teen Wolf. He must have found the original makeup artist. Probably like Rick Baker or Rob Bottin or Stan Winston's son or something
it's
like that.
It's unbelievable. He looks like fucking Chewbacca in a Letterman jacket.
This guy is not, he's not like charismatic. He's not expressive on stage, especially, you know, he's just a shoegaze thing, you know? He has, and he doesn't sell it with the makeup on either. It's horrible. He looks uncomfortable. It isn't comfortable.
To this day, every now and then one of us will just send each other like a still image of him on it, and we're like, it made us question everything.
Yeah, it did.
It was so embarrassing to be an M83
fan. And like David, I thought the singles, this must be a couple of goose, but there's going to be, as you said earlier on, gold in Dunder Hills. There isn't. It's turgid.
There's like
it's
two terrible. Tolerable singles, or like, you know, but I can't even remember what they're called. But it was just like this song called "Go." It's okay. It's all right.
So there,
Road Blaster. It's so, all right. That's about it.
Nothing from Junk will be in here, but there is something. The next song, number two,
Folie à Junk.
My number two will be an outlier in his career, but if you want to play it, then I'm sure Dave will have a lot to say about this one. You might notice a certain production value change there when it comes to M83 featuring Suzanne
Sundfor, a wonderful artist in her own right. By the way, you can
definitely hear Loïc Mahon's drums, that's for sure.
The cannon shot snare is a lost art, all right? The 80s gave us like the fucking
is this
best
a slapback,
thing ever.
Slapback delay?
No, the huge reverb.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Like, and it's just everywhere. It's in your left ear, it's in your right ear, it's in your face, it's blowing your hair back. It's like the best thing ever. And you know what? I'm so glad that someone in the modern world is using it again, because we don't hear it enough.
Well, this was 2013, and it's the song, of course, is from a film of the same name, Mick?
Oblivion.
And this is featured before. I think we picked this last time when Richard Chambers was last on, possibly in like morning Kickstarter.
Yeah,
maybe.
It was on a morning Kickstarter episode. Yeah,
we are both obsessed with this song.
There is incredible. There is a slight kind of, but definitely of the time, there's a certain seeness to it. Not a bad thing, but you know that.
Explain that, please.
As in terms of like I've played it for people and they're like, I'm not really a big Sia guy. Can you turn it off?
Yeah, you're obsessed with the song Chandelier, aren't
Chandelier
you?
And Elastikheart is the greatest pop culture 1-2 punch of the last century.
I wouldn't go that far. Elastikheart is great though.
You don't like Chandelier?
Not mad about Chandelier.
Okay,
no.
But
I find the vocals a bit annoying.
You can hear the production anyway. You can hear the score, which he did, which is not a good experience for him.
Yeah. So this is the Tom Cruise sci-fi film Oblivion, which comes out in 2013. I maintain it's a 3-star film.
Yeah, it's solid.
It looks great. It's directed by Joseph Kosinski, who, of course, would go on to do Top Gun Maverick with him.
And had previously, he'd worked with an electronic act on his previous film, Tron Legacy, so
Daft Punk.
He was like, I guess...
The electronic act who shall not be named.
It's a great score, in fairness. And again, that film looks great. Oblivion comes out. It's an extremely derivative sci-fi film, but I think it's got moments. And M83 is hard. He's hard to do the score. But he did go on record. He complained. He said, you know, like, I'm getting all these notes. And it's like, well, of course you fucking are. It's Tom Cruise summer blockbuster. And there's great stuff, you know. And he has his crew. He has his drummer. Like, he's flying. There's like a drum battle where there's two drummers kind of going.
You can hear the
money was spent.
You can hear the Anthony Gonzalez in there with the melodies and all that. You really can.
This track called Star Waves. It's really, really good. Like, it's a good score.
It is a really good score.
And this is the song that closes both the score and the movie itself. And I don't think it has no right to be this good, right? And I keep going back to it. And I'm telling you as well, everyone listening to me right now, you need to look up, to bring it back to fucking Kimmel, there's a performance
live performance
of this on Jimmy Kimmel, and it is astonishing, and her vocals,
are unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
The whole thing is sensational from start to and
drums.
And that it came out of this, you know, as you said, it's kind of stock, kind of generic sci-fi film that's a little bit station, but not incredible by any standards.
No.
That this song came out of that is even more remarkable for us as fans, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and I listened to the commentary of Oblivion because I'm a fucking weirdo, and like it's Tom Cruise and I think it's Joseph Kosinski, and like
does he call him JC or something? Does he call him? You know what he calls? He calls Christopher McQuarrie
McHugh. Yeah. The stuff like that, but like it starts off and like, you know, the score comes in pretty quickly, and like to hear Tom Cruise on a, like just say, you know, That's Anthony Gonzalez, M83.
Of course he did.
And he's like, love that guy's music. He does such a great job. You know, you're like, this is just so weird. Yeah. I also said before as well, like, I remember when I interviewed Sigrid, I interviewed her in the Three Arena a few years ago. And while, you know, we were going to do the interview, they were blasting Oblivion, this song, M83, in the thing. And I was like, oh man, that song fucking rules. And, you know, Sigrid is Scandinavian, Suzanne's done for Scandinavian, so maybe there's some connection there. But Sigrid told me that that's the track that they play in every venue they go to get a sense of how the sound has to be.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is fucking unbelievable. I was like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it exists beyond the realm of the Tom Cruise movie that a lot of people probably didn't appreciate, and probably didn't appreciate this, but like,
our love and fandom of it, like, doesn't translate to anybody else really. But it's not well known enough.
No,
you know.
And there's a version like someone's done that, like, because I think lately you and I have become obsessed with a certain genre on YouTube, shall we say, where it's like someone like takes that
the
thing,
comments?
Where, like, well, apart from the comment section, which is always, but like no, when someone like, you know, takes like a track and like does like it's this track, but for like, you know, extended mix for an hour.
Oh, yeah, we have these channels that, make these ambient hour-long things.
Oh, this is the one where God moving over the face of the waters, that kind of thing.
Where it's 25 minute version.
They'll just pick up on certain vibes from certain.
Or you slow it down 800%. And yeah, there is one called, like, you know, the film Collateral. Tom Cruise again. There's like Collateral ambience version too.
It's very good,
like,
doesn't it?
It's great to work to, and it's just kind of a loop, but it just totally works. And like, you don't have to think about anything else while you're just gone away. But like, there's a really great version of this where someone has just taken like kind of, they pulled it back a bit and they've dragged it the intro much more, and like you get this big long fucking, you know, kind of somnambulant build, and then
are you angry at me? Are we fighting? You haven't sent me this.
I have sent you this.
Have we fallen out?
I've definitely sent you this.
We're gonna fall out.
I'll send it to you right now, telepathically.
maybe you actually have. Yeah,
it's incredible. Like, I'm not exaggerating, and I know, you know, I'm one for hyperbole when it comes to music that I love, but you know, Adam will tell you I'm not in a great headspace at the moment, but this song absolutely helps me. This song, I find this song life affirming. I genuinely do. Okay. And I shouldn't be saying that about a fucking cash grab from a forgotten Tom Cruise blockbuster, but like, Suzanne Four is unbelievable on it. Yeah. The drums are exceptional.
Yeah.
There's so much heart in this, and it's the result of a terrible time he apparently had getting caught up in the Hollywood studio system. Boo-hoo, Anthony.
Boo-hoo.
You got well paid. You got this song
and
made.
You made this, yeah, exactly.
I can't get over it. I was hoping it would be in your list. I really, really was.
Yeah.
It's, well, and again, because like, this is technically non-canon, right? Because like, how many M83 fans go for this one? Like, it's
no,
just like,
no, it is. It's an outlier for sure. And I think a lot of people, a lot of M83 fans, might not know about the Oblivion stuff, really, you know. I know they kind of sold it for a couple of months around the PR, on the PR for the film itself, but it was the Tom Cruise machine.
Did you even see like the Jimmy Kimmel performance? Like, there's just like Sony branding everywhere. So
yeah.
Sony clearly bought the space and the time, and he has to go and tour it and whatever. And yeah, and the overall score, like, you know, it's a good score. It's not like the most remarkable one you'll ever hear, but it is good.
Well, you can tell there was orchestrators and arrangers and all that were brought in to take what his melodies probably, which are probably composed on his in his studio to make him into movie style. It was challenging for Daft Punk as well on Tron Legacy. They had to deal with orchestrators.
You're working to a brief.
Yeah.
And also, exactly. Ludwig Göransson's the same with Oppenheimer. He's openly said that he like developed this idea and then brought it to the, you know, the conductors and the whole ensemble, and then they kind of played it and it in their own way, and it just sounded so much better. But he had to do the tempo changes and stuff. So, like, it takes a village, you know.
He Well,
again, I can't stress this enough. It's a summer studio blockbuster starring Tom Cruise. The fact that most of his work survived is unbelievable. But sorry,
and Andrea Riseborough, Dave, just at least once mention her. Like. Yeah,
and Jackie Weaver,
Morgan Freeman. I think Nicolas
Coster-Waldau, and who's the other actor? Olga Kurylenko.
Oblivious, streaming now on Netflix.
Oblivion, baby. What a song.
Okay, so
number one,
it is
numero uno.
I can tell. This was very difficult for me, I can tell, even though we're simpatico, we're copacetic on this. Dave loves that word.
Copacetic. It's such a good word.
Although we share a lot of common ground in this, I think my top five, with the exception of Oblivion, might not have been any of yours.
Which
is what's great about it, because
Oblivion's in there. Because absolutely,
the thing about being an MA3 fan, there's a lot to choose from, which is really great. He's been at it for 25 years now, which is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. 1999 to 2024.
There's nine albums total, I believe, at this stage.
Which is a lot.
That's a lot of albums.
It's great.
Yeah. In fairness, yeah.
You know?
And like, there was one last year which I thought was good, not great. Fantasy, wasn't it?
Yeah, we liked Ocean's Niagara for a time. It was.
I thought the Blaze album was actually better, if you're going to go all French house over here.
Going into that album, I mean, the change drummer, change guitarist, which shows. And the Nine Inch Nails session musician and producer,
Justin Merlin Johnson, who I think did work on the Oblivion score, or at least was definitely involved in Hurry Up, We're Dreaming Onwards.
He's credited as a co-writer on most of the songs.
Yeah, and he's worked with Beck as well, I think. Yeah.
And so that there was a change there. I don't necessarily think for the better.
I think it's Justin Meldal Johnson's daughter on the track Raconte-moi une Histoire, Tell Me a Story, which is a beautiful song from Hurry Up, We're Dreaming. So there's all these baked in characters.
Yeah. So there's been a change in personnel, which I don't think. I mean, it all revolves around him. He is the sun, which all the planets would.
Yeah, it's a Nine Inch Nails type situation.
Yeah, it is. What a beautiful way to tie it all in. Yeah. But this is going to be my favorite song, because I have mentioned it probably three or four times already. It's the one that got me into them. It's kind of very simple, you know, as what everything was on Dead Cities. It's a heavy dance kick drum, some washed out cymbals and some synthesizers and very little vocals, but it's the one that I always came back to it, especially as I did with all MA3 music on the 13th of March 2020, as in when I was like, what the fuck am I going to do, what are we going to do, we're all going to be sitting at home for the next however how long. And it was I got out all my old MA3 albums, and they just got me through the whole thing. Not like
Run into Flowers,
not Bohemian Rhapsody or nothing like that. It's not complex, but the simplest ideas for me, his simplest ideas are my favorite. You know, it's where everything about Junk sucked, because he was trying lots of different musical ideas and sonic ideas, and it was all just because he was glib, he was being pithy about the whole thing. I said pithy, by the way.
So this is Run to Flowers from the album Cities, Red Seas, and Lost
third song,
Ghosts.
The song that I came in from the other room when I heard on the TV in 2003, and it changed the way I wanted to make music. Genuinely,
I always enjoy those moments when you see something pivotal on a television screen. Weren't you at a party once and you saw a particular scene from Taken 3 that made you stop what you were doing?
Yeah, it's the Liam Neeson jumping over the fence. But then I like
75
we were all like, did you just see that? Yeah. It's like, he's like, back that up there a second, like, that can't be right. Is there something wrong with your TV? Yeah, I remember that party. Yeah, that was, and then then we kind of started to bond over that. You and I were like, there's an edit of this going around.
Someone dragged it even further, turned
it over, do about 60, 70 seconds. Like, but it was one of those moments.
Look up Liam Neeson jumping over a fence and Taken 3, everybody.
But not the same kind of epiphany, really.
No.
But when I say that what I was into at the time and what I was doing as a musician musically was a lot different to what I ended up doing with the Galaxy. And what I wanted to do was propulsive power and melody and moving melody. I didn't want it to be sterile and have no kind of feeling or heart to it. So what I tried to do was exactly what I heard that day, which was something like Run Into Flowers.
Yeah, no, it's heart-stoppingly beautiful. Mm. I find this album to be much more, and again, as a reminder, this is the last time that Nicolas Fromageau was in the outfit. So, like, is it fair to say that this is a more, like, it's a bit more melancholic of a record?
Yeah.
It's a darker album.
There's always kind of a sorrow with a lot of his stuff. And if I can talk for a second about Digital Shades Volume 1 and 2,
yeah,
they're incredibly sorrowful albums. They're really melancholic. They're really... But it's not in a way that's, I mean, I'm loath to use this word. It's not depressing. It's very fulfilling, you know, and it is about just kind of, and a lot of them are simple ideas. A lot of it is atmospheres and field recordings and ambience and still with that melodic core, that sad melodic core, but I find them to be incredibly devastating albums to pair them. Digital Shades 2 is more, kind of leans into a bit more bizarrely folk direction with the guitars and all that, but Digital Shades Volume 1, if it was up to me, I would have put By the Kiss in here.
Amazing song.
But I wasn't going, how could I get anyone to tell me three with By the Kiss, because it's so oppressively, incredibly sad.
Yeah, it's really, really beautiful though. But I mean, again, like, you have those
moments.
If you
want to sit around like an old sad bastard like myself, just put on Digital Shades Volume 1 from the start and just grim out.
Like, I wouldn't send On a White Lake Near a Green Mountain to someone.
It's the same.
As their first
gorgeous
ever. But it's an unbelievable song.
And stuff like, I mean, it's weird. In Church is a bizarre piece of music. Like, it's got this church organ, obviously, and it just breaks down into this screaming industrial noise. But at the same time, the center melody is heartbreaking. It's horrifyingly sad.
Yeah, no. I mean, but again, like, the thing I get, like, what do you get the most out of M83? Because, like, I find that, like, it does take me somewhere else. It does conjure up a different world, and a lot of the time it gives me adrenaline, it excites me, and it does pick me up. Like, I do find it, you know, at its best, I find it to be, like, just like the biggest, I can grasp onto it. It can pick me up out of a bad day. It can, like, make me want to fucking run through walls.
Well,
you know,
not to go too much into it, but I needed it in March 2020. I did.
Yeah.
You know, I was busying myself doing stuff like raking leaves and, you know, cause everything just stopped and I had nothing to do and no one to do it with. And I was like, okay, I need this. And I put on Dead Cities, and I was like, okay, I remember this. Now I know what to do. And genuinely, that's what it was. It was Before the Dawn Heals Us. It was Saturday's Youth. It was Digital Shades. It all came together, and I needed it.
It was junk.
It was junk. It was Oblivion, in fairness, now, but it was junk. I needed to see that little Shih Tzu's face on the album cover or whatever the fuck it was.
Lastly, I don't think I think it's been proven out now. Like, he peaks with Before the Dawn Heals Us, right? I mean, like it's never going to be that good again.
No,
right?
not to be reductive about it. Like, you know,
sure,
everyone peaks. You know,
yeah,
probably. We can't expect it to ever get that good again. Nor should we expect that. You know, we have that. It exists.
No, we have masterpieces, but you kind of live in hope. Like you're like, oh, return to form. I think Junk was such an idea.
You hope Christopher Nolan will one day make a film like Following again, won't you? As good as Following. That's what you want.
I've still never seen it.
No one has. That's his whole thing. No one has seen Following.
No, people buy it and they have it in their collection, but nobody actually has seen that movie.
You're waiting for Wes Anderson to get back to Bottle Rocket style-y.
Not a big Wes Anderson guy.
Not a big Bottle Rocket guy. I've never understood the appeal at all.
No, not for me. You're a big Oppenheimer guy, as we wrap up here.
Yeah, it was a lot. You know, I watched the Oscars. Thank you, David, by the way. Mm-hmm. My stream kept crapping out, and you sent me on.
I sent you a legal stream, definitely. There was no illegality whatsoever.
It was legit. It was too legit to quit.
If anything. It didn't drop. Not once.
And
much like United Liverpool the other day. Way.
And it was fantastic. But I celebrated Ludwig Göransson, I would say Cillian Murphy and the
Hoyt.
I celebrated those like goals.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. You were very worried.
I really was worried. We were getting worried when American Fiction took home the adapted screenplay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
because we saw that film.
Yeah, it's not a good film.
It's not a good film.
With a
horrible script.
Yeah,
you know?
And a terrible score. The music score in American Fiction is absolutely shocking. But yeah, we could talk about movies all day, but we won't do that.
Yes, we won't do that. That's more of a no popcorn situation.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up. Any other recommends? Even if, say, someone, you know, is like, oh, you know what? I'm really enjoying this M83. Where can I get more of that kind of music? Like who else kind of is in this kind of field for you? Whether it doesn't have to be like a direct sound alike, but other acts that kind of give you that
adjacent,
level of...
Jason, alongside Digital Shades, I quite listen to... John Z and Alex's album from about 2009 called Royce Boy Sleeps. That was, there's no electronic instruments in that, but it does not sound like it in terms of the ambient, in terms of the propulsive, heavy kind of. It's hard for me to find anything to compare, really.
Okay.
What about you?
Again, I'm probably going to dip back into the, you know, the Nine Inch Nails bag, as I have been doing again lately. In fairness, that Guardian list kind of prompted me to go back to some of the other ones. I mean, like, you know, you saw that episode of Twin Peaks where they play She's Gone Away. And that wasn't in the Guardian list either, like the song She's Gone Away. But I don't know, these acts are rare. You know, like it doesn't, like the ones that genuinely kind of like lift me up and take me somewhere else. I think, you know, I remember sending you that horror song, Something to Remember Me By.
And you were like, I was like, no, David, you didn't send it to me. You told me, you were in my in the studio we had at Galaxy. And we just met up and I think I was going to rehearse some of that. And we talked there and I was like, so what was your favorite song of the year? And he said, you said it was Something to Remember Me By. And I was like, I'm afraid I don't know that one.
Yeah, same year that Territory by The Blaze was out as well, of course. And we had all those moments.
Boy, you took it home that year, David. you changed everything with that recommendation.
I changed everything. That's who I am. That's what I do.
It's kind of, I might just sum up, like, in that I'm doing kind of an introduction to people who will not know anything maybe beyond Midnight City, but it's kind of, when you think about the career milestones, it's quite an extraordinary career.
Sure.
You know, I think about even who he's working with now, Nine Inch Nails. It was probably a pipe dream years ago to work with someone who was working with Nine Inch Nails. You know, the Hollywood movie, the Tom Cruise of it all.
That's wild, yeah.
And, you know, he's supporting Kings of Leon, playing his own shows, obviously Love of the World. It's kind of beyond, it's kind of the perfect career, really, when you think about it, for someone who's still quite underrated, I think, and still quite undervalued.
And as you've noticed, uncharismatic in an interview situation.
He doesn't act seem like a nice person. It's got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, he seems kind of standoffish, but that's fine. You know, like, musicians, man. Am I right? but yes, I want to thank this musician, Michael Pope, for coming in. You're not an ex musician for coming in.
You're never an ex musician.
Yeah, mate. It's like, you know, like people say, like, oh, I'm not a music journalist anymore. It's like, nah, it's in you. You know, you are. It's who you are. But I want to thank you for coming in, man.
Pleasure.
To the studio.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Adam, and thank you, David.
Yes,
you're so welcome.
And thank you, Sonic Architect, Adam.
Yep.
The words failed me there.
That's all good. This is great. Like, I don't have a whole lot of familiarity with M83, admittedly, outside of this show. So it was,
let's hope he doesn't get cancelled by the time that we put this episode
in the 24 hours.
You just never know.
It's gonna be something like something off the chain, though, like the whole Armie Hammer thing. Like, you know, he's M82 front man arrested for cannibalism.
Yeah, it's great. It's nice to get an insight into like what it, like a spread of records and like things that happened across a different time period, and especially with like lineup changes and stuff. And I will say, I particularly enjoyed the article that you referred to earlier, the one that you wrote.
Oh yeah,
I can include that in the show notes. Sure, if you so wish.
I wrote a very pretentious article
for Drowning Sound.
Yeah, include that, but for balance, also include, there's a really good Pitchfork interview that Ian Cohen did with Anthony Gonzalez in 2014 as well. It's kind of wide ranging as he tends to be in.
Yeah, and entirely humorless, obviously, because
very much so.
It seems to be having a bad time all the time.
Yeah, we'll include a playlist that I made a while ago of M83 in the show notes, and we'll include those two article links as well. And it is, of course, patreon.com/noencore if you want to support the show. It's $5 a month. You get the episode 24 hours early, ad-free, over on Patreon. And also, again, if you want to, you know, send us a message and correct our pronunciation, you can do that as well.
Yeah, as
that is your right.
That is your right.
As a patron.
And I think I've got the final edits done on the new thing that is coming over on Patreon. There will be details about that soon. I will leave it with you for now, but do join us over there. It's a good time. You get your weekly previews, you get your episode, like Dave said, 24 hours early and ad free, so Thursday instead of Friday. And yeah, you can message us directly, comment on us, interact with us. We're great over there. It's a great time.
It's a great time. It's a great place. It's a great thing to be able to talk about M83 with my buddy. And thank you all for listening and for coming to the show and all that kind of stuff. My name is Dave Hanready. This has been... Are you doing the Robbie Williams?
It's Neil Hannon.
It's Neil Hannon, Goodbye. That'd be a good karaoke song. My name is Dave Hanready. This has been No Encore. There will be No Encore. We're back next week. Much love. Take care.
the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.